And with me right now to get things started off is nuclear physicist Stanton Friedman, that most of you, I think, know as the author of Crash at Corona, the definitive study of the Roswell incident, Top Secret Magic. And George, remember, Stanton was with you on Coast a couple of weeks ago.
Sure was.
Well, he received a number of phone calls with information concerning Roswell. One of the, I think, real opportunities when we do these radio programs is to reach out to people, knowing that in some cases, that people with firsthand knowledge, may be passing. And, here he is now to share some new information that he has received and to encourage Coast listeners again to contact him. If you have any information about Roswell crash disks and any related issues, and I will be asking him to give out a number that you can contact him. But right now, we're going to start with what he heard, George, after his last session with you.
Okay.
Here is Stanton Friedman.
Great.
Hi, George.
Hey, Stan. How are you doing? Doing all right?
I'm celebrating the 4th of July. At least half of me that's American is.
Look, you're a good man. Hey, so when you were on with me a couple weeks ago, and you did ask for some phone calls from people if they had any information, did something happen?
Yeah. You know, I gave out my toll-free number, 1-877-457-0232. And people ordered books and stuff. I offered a special package to your listeners. But I got a number of other phone calls. Now, some were more useful than others. And one problem that any investigator has to have to be concerned with about events that took place a long time ago, you know, we're talking 56 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I had another example of somebody who remembered seeing pictures in the paper of an alien body. In the newspaper articles about Roswell, absolutely certain of that, and I'll guarantee you I've looked at dozens and dozens of newspapers, and there weren't any pictures of alien bodies in the newspapers, for sure. And when I followed up in the past, and this happened again, it turned out to be the pictures taken in General Ramey's office, and there were no alien bodies
right there.
But much more interesting, there were three calls, but one was particularly exciting from a woman who'd been thinking about calling me for 3 months and heard me on your program and used the number. And it turns out that a parent, before the parent's death, told her that and cried about it. She was sorry she hadn't said anything before, but she couldn't, the parent, and was present at the crash site.
Oh, my. Yeah, this is the first time you ever heard about this?
Yes, this particular...
This case. All right.
Okay, person who was there, and you know, as I said on the air then, we know that there were lots of people around, the guards, the people who carried the wreckage. You know, it takes a pretty big operation when you've got crash debris spread out over a large area.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a colleague, this person is on the West Coast, who will be talking to her directly. I've sent her some background information to assure her that, you know, I'm reliable and I don't use names without permission.
Right, I understand, of course.
But it was the exact situation I had described, wanting firsthand or, you know, deathbed confessions, which I would certainly say this was. And, you know, in a court of law, a deathbed confession carries a lot of weight because what has the person got to lose, you know, or to gain,
I guess
is the way to put it. So that one was a particularly exciting one. And two of the others that I'm following up involved people who know relatives of some people who were involved and are going to get back to me with a little more information. And, you know, you have to let people know that they can trust you, I guess is what it boils down to.
Well, that's true. What were some of the things that she said that her mother might have told her?
That saw the bodies.
The bodies.
Yeah. And wreckage, of course, but it was the bodies that were particularly intriguing.
Now, was she part of any agency, or was she just a citizen of Roswell?
No. She had been in the military. The parent had flight training. There was some family connection with the mother and father, and I'd heard this story before, with General MacArthur, that when they had, where both parents were involved with the MacArthur, you know, with any military important person, they tried to groom their kids if they were appropriately intelligent and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
to take part in future operations because they were certain of the family loyalty, you know, all the family checking security clearances and stuff is a lot easier when you know the parents who also had security clearances for a long time. So there was an in-depth going back in time relationship between the family and the government and the military. And I've heard this before from other people, completely separate from this instance.
Well, this could be a dramatic outcome for
George,
you, Stan. Because,
I'm going to just break in here for a second.
All right, go ahead, Lynn.
Because just recently, Sci-Fi Channel ran 4 hours back-to-back, 2 hours on Roswell, and then the Out of the Blue. And when you got through those 4 hours, you had the impression that the circumstantial evidence, at least, is so enormous for something extraordinary having happened in that area between Corona, Roswell, and perhaps over to White Sands. And I wanted to ask Stanton, who probably as much as anybody on this planet has devoted his life to trying to get to the bottom of this. And here we have 4 hours that are going on television. What right now, Stanton, as we're talking 2003 July, do you think is the strongest single evidence that convinces you that something not terrestrial occurred there?
Well, to me, the most impressive evidence was the military people, the testimony in particular. I'm thinking of retired General Thomas Jefferson Dubose. He was a colonel at the time. He was General Roger Ramey's chief of staff in Fort Worth, Texas. What's important is that he took the call, and I got this firsthand from him. He was in his 80s now, and he's dead now, of course. But when I located him, and I had to work to find him because all I had was newspaper articles from 1947,
yeah.
But rather an interesting name, and I figured he probably had gone to West Point. Because we know that Colonel Blanchard had gone to West Point. We know that Roger Ramey had gone to West Point. And as you know, an awful lot of the officers during World War II were West Pointers.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the whole point of having West Point. And so I located him, and I met with him, had phone conversations first, and then met with him at his home, and then again a second time during a visit. He lived in Florida. And his testimony to me, that he took the call from General Ramey's boss, another West Pointer, General Clements McMullen, in Washington, telling him three things. To, first of all, get the media off their backs, because the press story had gone out about Roswell. I don't care how you do it, was the phrase that was used. Secondly, to send some of the wreckage up there with one of his colonel couriers, when the wreckage showed up. And third, never to talk about it again, even to his buddy Roger Ramey.
Yeah, mum's the word right after that.
Yeah, and that's an order. Do I need to put it in writing? No, sir. I mean, young people may not understand this, but when a military, a two-star general, tells a colonel what to do, he does it. He doesn't argue. It's not something you debate about. An order's an order. Well, you know, this is right after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this sequence. Blanchard, West Point, his boss, Ramey, West Point, his boss, McMullen, West Point, and the intermediate, in this case, Colonel Dubose, West Point.
Chain of command in the military has been and has always been very critical, and people listen to their superiors.
They listen to their superiors. They follow their orders. And I should add, incidentally, that Dubose went on to be a general. He was a retired general when I met with him in his home. Also, that he set up the Air Force's search and rescue operations after that, and that he had 18,000 hours as a pilot. He was an instructor. That's a lot of hours for any people out there who wonder about such things.
Right.